So, how are you all doing? It's kind of funny, isn't it, what we do? Sitting around, walking back and forth. Maybe some of you have wondered what the other folk out there thought of what was going on in here. It's something remarkably simple, and yet equally profound. To be doing what we're doing, to be seeking, to understand what it means to be awake, to realize, to recognize, and to more and more live from a sense of what is true and what is possible for us as human beings. This is what we're involved with, this is what we're concerned with here. I entitled the day, The Radiant Heart. It's kind of a few words that could mean lots of things. For me, what it expresses is something of what it is that we are discovering, or that we have the potential to discover in our lives through practice, meditation, and other forms of spiritual exploration. It's easy to come into a situation like this, or to be engaged in a journey of meditation, with a sense of somehow having a problem to fix, or there being something wrong that we need to get rid of or get over. And that attitude and orientation that we can come with, that we can bring into our lives and equally into our meditation, seems quite compelling. Seems like somehow what should be is not, and what shouldn't be is. And our job is to sort that out. Like we need to make our experience or our world or ourself into more of what should be and less of what shouldn't be. And it kind of makes sense, really, because we can see that there's a certain suffering, struggle and limitation bound up in ways of being or reacting or interacting in the world that we wish some release from or seek to no longer be limited by. And so we come quite naturally and understandably to meditation practice or to a day retreat or engage for years and decades maybe in meditative and other spiritual exploration, often coming out of the sense of the need to somehow change the way things are. From the point of view of Dharma practice, we are not seeking to change the way things are. We are seeking to understand the way things are and to harmonize our engagement with those things that are in accordance with that. In other words, through understanding how things are, we can come into accord and into harmony with life. And the underlying sense that somehow we have to fix ourselves comes out of a misunderstanding, comes out of a not really seeing of what it is that we are, we could say. And therefore the easy and consequent dissatisfaction with how we are, or what we think, or who we think we are, and how we experience life. This dissatisfaction has a role to play, because it does bring us to seeking, it does bring us to looking, it does bring us to questioning, and it has its value, it has its importance in that. And yet if it's coming from an unquestioned sense of something not being okay, something being wrong, something somehow being lacking or missing at the very core and heart of our existence, then that premise, that foundation from which the engagement or the movement of our journey proceeds, you can leave them outside, they'll be fine. You can leave them outside. That whole sense of where our process comes from tends to colour and flavour whatever happens in the journey and whatever we discover along the way. Does that make sense? Does that sense of somehow, because we're starting from a premise or a belief that there is something fundamentally wrong at the core of it all, that we need to resolve or fix, no matter what we do, no matter where we find ourselves or what we encounter, that particular view, often unseen and unconscious, somehow finds its way into that situation, and the conclusion is that it's still not okay, it's still not right, I've still got a problem here or a project or something I have to fix. Now when we talk about transformation, and we do in spiritual teachings and Dharma teachings and practice, we talk about transformation, it's very easy to imagine that, oh yeah, great, here's some tools for fixing that thing that needs fixing. I can do that to it, this thing that we maybe call me, or this thing that we maybe call the world, or my life, which is basically the relationship between the two, or the interaction and engagement between the two, what we call me and what we call the world and others. And so that sense of coming, looking for transformation, seeking for some resolution that we hear about, that spiritual teachings point to, we think, oh great, yeah, this is what will do it, this is what can do it. And so then we find ourselves sitting or standing or walking, somehow trying to make the transformation happen, somehow trying to use these tools to fix it, without necessarily having a clear or exact idea of whatever it is that needs fixing, or what it will look like once it's been fixed. All we have the sense of is that somehow, hopefully, a sense of unease or a sense of incompletion or somehow a sense of things not being as they are needs to be resolved. And yet it's really easy for the process of spiritual practice to simply become another expression of the same pattern of life, of our lives, of the sense of something's not okay, I need to fix it, how do I do it, here are the tools, how do I apply them, how do I get this meditation to work to produce the effect that I want it to produce, which would be really peaceful, calm breaths, a really relaxed, alert body, just like the guy at the front said, relaxed, alert, wouldn't that be good, huh? Shouldn't I be able to make that happen? And yet what we notice often is when it gets relaxed, it stops being alert. Or when it gets alert, or when it's alert, it's a little bit stiff or tight. And that kind of place, that balance point in the middle, seems a very fine edge to walk. Of course, over time we begin to see that as we give attention to it, yes, the body is more able to be alert and yet relaxed, but not perfectly so. But the breath maybe does begin to soften or open. But more because we're allowing it to be just the way it is than because we're making it be the way it should be. And yet to see how our mind comes in doing that again and again. And when we're living, when we're operating, when we're interacting with life in that way, it has the effect of obscuring something that's taking place, always, inevitably, happening. And yet which we don't really see, we're not really in contact with, because we're oriented towards the sense of the problem and the need for the resolution and the process of getting from the problem to the resolution. It's like, what's going on? That's my life. And of course the particulars of one person's particular problem and the resolution they're seeking might look very different from somebody else's. You know, just in the meditation for one person, you know, if only my knee would stop hurting, and then it would be okay. For someone else, you know, if my mind would stop chattering, or if the trains would go away, or those people out there, don't they know we're being silent? What are they talking so loud for? You know, everyone's particular thing will be different, but the process is remarkably similar for all of us. Remarkably similar, instantly recognizable. When we hear each other's stories, as we might have opportunity to, in sharing with friends or in situations where we can talk about our lives, certain dynamic patterns keep reoccurring for pretty much everyone, it seems. So, looking at what we're doing here, it might seem that we're learning to be mindful. And what we've got to do is get better at this thing being called being present, or being mindful, or being conscious, or being all those things that was said we were supposed to be. That's what it sounded like the meditation instructions were suggesting, didn't it? You should be mindful, alert, engaged, interested, open, and all at once. My gosh, it's quite a project. No wonder we get worn out by lunchtime. Yeah? And yet, if you were to tell some of your friends at home who haven't done this sort of thing before what you were doing all morning, so we sat around for 40 minutes, didn't do much, comfortable chair or soft cushion, got up, ambled back and forth for 20 minutes, didn't really go anywhere, do anything, sat down a bit more, ambled around, listened to some chap talking for a few minutes, and at the end of it I was exhausted. They'd totally understand, wouldn't it? They'd get it. They'd know why it was such hard work. No. They'd be thinking, huh? Why was that such hard work? Mostly it's hard work, and we know, we experience that, because something in us compulsively attempts to make this process happen. Yeah? It's like, I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but sometimes when the weather's not been great for a while, and one goes out and looks at the clouds and just kind of wants the sun to shine, did you ever notice yourself trying to get the sun to shine by thinking, I really wish it would shine now? Now, it's lovely it's shining here today, but, you know, it's been raining most of the month in Devon, I don't know about here. And there's that sense sometimes of, yeah, of course, it's obvious that no matter how much we want it to, it's not going to shine for that reason, that we're wanting it to shine. But here, in terms of being present, it's like, how do you do that? How do you make that happen? Actually, we can't really. That might sound like, why didn't you tell me that at the beginning? I thought you told me we were supposed to be being present this whole day. And yes, the invitation is to really be present as fully as we're able. But so far as it's something we're trying to make happen, the very trying gets in the way. The very effort to be here usually requires or has with it a picture that says, and what I need in order to be here is that my body be comfortable, my mind be calm, my heart be at peace, and everybody else shut up. And when all that happens, then I'll be able to do it. But until then, I'm just going to struggle with all this. So that's really just the story of our life in lots of ways. So when we talk about being present, habitually we think it's something to do or somewhere to get, but it's not. What we are learning to do here, or what we are practicing, we could say, is not being present. We don't need to practice that. That's not something you can practice as such. What we practice is letting go of our habit of pursuing and holding on to the patterns of thinking and reactivity that take us away. That's what we're doing. We're not being present. I mean, it's like, I don't have to do anything to be here. I'm already here. That's not something I'm doing. But if my urge is to keep running out the door, what I have to do, if I'm doing anything to be present, is just keep coming back. Keep coming back. So to understand presence, or that quality of mindfulness, that simple knowing of our experience, we need to recognize that it's what happens naturally when we're not distracted, when we're not following the pattern of thinking, or the storyline, or the fantasy. So that storyline, that habit of thinking, that pattern of reactivity, those are things we are doing. Now, not intentionally always, not sometimes in a sense in which we feel like we have a choice about it, but as a pattern of behavior that we have through perhaps decades, if not lifetimes, established in our mind by quite happily going along with it, we are, yes, doing that. And what we're learning to do, because we can't stop doing it as an act of will, it's not like we can just say, okay, I'll stop doing it. Otherwise, at the beginning, I'd just say, okay, so stop doing it, we'd all stop, great. But it's not like that. It's not subject to that kind of control by our decision making. What we set is an intention and an orientation towards whenever we see that we've become lost or caught or entangled or reactive, we step out of that. And in stepping out of it, again, it's not like we go somewhere to be present. That's just where we are. In the same way that when you open, if your eyes are closed, you can try this if you like, if your eyes are closed, there's something blocking the light getting in. But when you open your eyes, you don't have to do something in order to see. It just happens. That's what's there when we're not obscuring it. Likewise, that quality of being present is simply revealed by the condition of non-distractedness. To understand this is, it might at one point, or from one perspective, seem like, so what's the difference? The difference is that that quality is the natural expression of our life. It is innate. It's there when we're not covering it over with our habitual mental activity. That's what's there. That's what's there. And there's something remarkable about it. Something mysterious and precious. That when we are present, when we're not caught in that distractedness, we notice that there's a quality to this, and even moments of it, even very brief moments of it, where we're just really here. It's not like we did anything to make that happen, just we're not doing something else, and we're really here. And in that, that experience speaks to us directly. We recognize it, we know it. Even though it's fresh, it's new. To be present, it can't be something old. It's always fresh, but it's equally familiar to us. We know it. We know it. And in that knowing of it, in that freshness and familiarity of it, something in us actually rests. Something in us rests. Because this quality, or this capacity, or this experience, we could say, that we are in contact with in that simple moment of being present, it offers us much of what we've been looking for, even though we haven't known it. Well, it's not so much even that it offers us, it's like what we're looking for, much of what we're looking for is actually just there. It's not like there's a transaction going on, it's just there. But because of the way we tend to relate to it in terms of it's something I got, therefore it's something I have to keep, and I have to remember what I did in order to get it, we very quickly get busy with trying to make it happen some more, and thereby actually lose contact with it. So, what would it be for us to understand our practices simply the practice of non-distraction, non-distractedness? Giving up our intoxication with our addiction to the mental activity that takes us away. That's what we're asked to do here. It's not a small ask. It's not a small ask. And yet, it's perhaps one of the most important things we'll ever undertake in the service of our own well-being, our own happiness, our own freedom. To give up the intoxication in mental activity, in stories, in images, in conclusions. And in those moments where we are able to, and sometimes they seem like more like grace than anything, because it just suddenly seems, in fact it's always grace, we just don't notice, but any moment we become conscious. Have you thought about what's happened between the previous moment when we were lost or unconscious and that moment? Like, how does that happen? Because by definition we're not there the previous moment to do anything about it, we're unconscious. In fact, that unconsciousness is not a problem in itself, it seems, because we don't even know it's happening. We're in that mind-created world. And then suddenly, somehow, it seems, and it might be after quite some time, we sometimes notice with a little embarrassment, but nothing to be embarrassed about, really. Again, just what happens. We notice, huh, wow, I was, you know, on holiday in Spain, working through my, you know, primary school bullying sort of relationship, or relationship with these kids who were mean to me, you know, or dealing with whatever it was, some story, or maybe it's a little bit closer to our actual situation and we're more sort of thinking about our meditative practice and where it's going or not. And then there's that moment of just, uh-huh. What is it that happens that illuminates that place? What is it that illuminates it? Because if we're not interested in that question, if we're not asking or curious as to that, then it's easy to miss what's happening, what's taking place, because it's like once we let go of whatever is causing us to hold on, and that's another whole topic which won't be today's, whatever's causing us to hold on to any pattern of reactivity or thought or storyline, most of which is about seeking security, which is a short answer to the question. But whenever we allow or are able to let that go, it's like the very radiance of our life fills the space with that simple quality of presence. It's something that flows into the space when we don't fill it, just as light flows into space when it's not obscured. And the way we recognize it is in that sense of presence, of being located but not locatable. It's not like there's somewhere or something or someone even, but just the sense of, ah, this, now, here. Just that sense of that. And there's something in us that knows it. Because that something in us is that. Quite simply. It's not something we can take hold of. Because by its very nature, it's not graspable. All the things we take hold of that it seems graspable, or that we can grasp at, ultimately do not give us what we're seeking from them. So we learn to let them go. The activity of mind that we think will solve our problems turns out much of the time to actually be the root of a lot of those problems. Stepping out of that doesn't mean we abandon the thinking faculty of the mind, that it doesn't have its value and its place, but that we inform that faculty and remarkable capacity that it is, we inform that with some different values, and that it's not being driven by the primary sense that there's something wrong or something missing that I need to find or fix. Because so long as that's underlying it all, It goes on forever with no resolution. And when that's not what's driving it, then it simply becomes a useful tool that has its place and its value, but also the point at which it's no longer needed. So thinking is not the problem. It's seeing. It's understanding. Practicing non-distractedness. What is revealed is this. Just this. And yet, quite ordinary, not at all different, and yet completely different than otherwise we would understand it. Our normal sense of life is so much about a boundariedness, a boundedness, a contained, confined, compressed, contracted experience. And we can feel that in our body. Sometimes that's what we notice when we start to sit. We feel those places of contraction and tightness, and physically we express, or our body expresses our consciousness. The condition of our consciousness gets expressed in our body. They interact, express each other. And likewise, our mind becomes tight, contracted, painfully so, tending to loop around a more and more limited range of painful topics often, or topics that don't bring satisfaction or resolution. We feel that sense of contraction, 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 and so much of it is born of the sense of, again, something's wrong, needs to be fixed, I've got to do it, how do I do it, I'm not able to, I don't know, but I have to, I don't know how to do it, but I have to, it's a problem, huh? Something to fix, I have to fix it, I don't know how. If that's our life, it just gets tighter and tighter and tighter. And so when we find ourselves outside of that, there's a sense of expansion, there's a sense of openness, there's a sense of radiance, in fact, of just somehow expanding out, of not being so defined, not being so confined by this experience of being conscious, awake, in contact with life, which is what's going on, which is what's happening. We're also learning to practice non-reactivity, non-distractedness and non-reactivity, we could say, non-resistance. So often what we can feel, I think, and understandably, is a sense of the limitation in our heart's capacity to open, to embrace, to feel a sense of connection, a sense of affection, a sense of relationship with others, with life, with ourselves. We can often experience a profoundly painful sense of being separate and disconnected. And this really lies at the core of much of our suffering and much of our sense of something wrong that I need to fix. And again, there's the sense with that of somehow feeling that I need to be more open, I need to be more loving, I need to somehow become that, make myself into this. And it's a lovely aspiration and wholesome in a certain way, except insofar as, again, it comes out of a place of something not rightness, something not okayness, then it stays within that paradigm, it stays within that framework, that no matter how much more open or how much more loving or kind we are able to become, it will always be somehow not quite good enough. Or we'll always tend to highlight or focus on and notice much more where we're not able to be so. and the image or the picture we might have of our life or ourselves can easily be constructed from our tendency to focus on that which isn't the way we think it should be, almost to the exclusion of everything else. And so we have this very narrow picture, this very limited picture. And again, there's something profoundly painful in defining ourselves or our lives in this way. Something in us cannot be at ease, cannot rest in that condition. In terms of, again, when we talk about what we're doing here, what we're seeking to, the transformation that we're seeking, it's not about somehow becoming more of something, but seeing that there are patterns and habits of reactivity that we can learn to release ourselves from, that we can start to understand and recognize as not conducing or contributing to well-being. And we might feel this, we might see these ways in which we judge or blame others or ourselves or our experience in a way in which we say, this is not acceptable, this is not allowed. Now there are certainly experiences and circumstances which we might appropriately say this is not acceptable in terms of the causing of suffering and the causing of harm. We might wish to say, no, that's not okay. And yet, that's a very different thing. Being able to say no to something harmful is different from a way in which we contract and close our heart in relationship to such experiences, situations, people, actions or behaviors in ourselves. There's so much fear, so much anger, so much aggression and hatred that can be expressed in the name of trying to take care of that which we value or that which we love. And learning to release ourselves from that, to see how painful, how limited it is, by putting that down again and again and just coming back into contact with our experience, and in very small ways learning to accommodate those difficult things we encounter in a meditation period or in a day or in a life, learning to accommodate them, make space for them. It's like just allowing, this isn't how I would wish it to be, but maybe it's possible nonetheless to open my heart to this, rather than assuming or presuming the solution is that I have to fix that thing. And even those places where we see that our heart can't open, that too, we don't need then to make that, oh, now I've got to fix this thing, my heart that won't open to this difficult thing. So, can I open to the fact that my heart won't open here? That I can't actually make space for that difficult thing here, right now. And actually open to that. That's what it means to begin to put down the habit of reactivity. To be able to make space for what is here. And this again, we're practicing this in a very simple but ongoing way as we sit in meditation. All those places that we encounter that we'd really rather not have to. Just being able to say, okay, can I embrace this too? It's like a practice of opening our hearts. And in this, to see that there's a natural caring there in us all. There's a natural, inevitable, unstoppable caring that we have in our hearts. That it's not possible to lose. We'd be dead if it wasn't there. Life wouldn't be happening without that. And yet we lose contact with it. We lose sight of it. We're not really able to recognize that it's there underlying pretty much anything and everything we do. It easily gets distorted in the way it's expressed because of the way in which we don't see clearly the nature of things. We tend to see in terms of divisions and separation. We tend to see in terms of me and you, us and them, this and that. When the nature of what's really there in the heart of our life is something expansive and unbounded, unlimited. And in times when we're in touch with that, we recognize there's something, again, something true about that quality of openness or care or love. We often associate it with the thing that it seems to go to, maybe someone or some sort of something that we value, that we find precious. And yet, what's truly precious and what's really important is that that capacity is there in us. And it's really just what's there when we're not caught in reactivity. And I say that and I speak about this because it's really important to trust, to know, and to really see that this is so. Otherwise, we tend to continue to operate from the sense of it's not okay. It's not, there's something at the core that isn't as it should be, that we need to fix. And to begin to recognize and to trust that sense of caring in our hearts, that there is that which cares, and that this caring is not just essential to our life, but it's not something that really ever goes or gets lost or could be lost. It's, how to say, it's like it's something that becomes obscured, something that we lose touch with. And something is the wrong word too, of course, because it's not something, but it's this quality, this capacity for what our life can express and manifest, what can move through our life, or our life can be moved by the sense of how deeply we care. How deeply life cares. The reason and the way that sense of really innate and natural, say organic, warmth and friendliness, that, again, it's like a radiant quality of the heart, just as we could say light has a sort of illuminating quality and being present has that sort of, it just shows what's here. There's also a warmth that comes with that, just as there's warmth with the sunlight. It not just shows us what's here, but there's a warming, there's a way in that warming, there's a relaxing, there's an opening, there's a, just, you know, that's why we like sunbathing, even though it's actually not good for us these days. But it's like, we really relax feeling that warmth, and there's a quality of relaxation that comes in the very bones of our being, in the very marrow and core of our cells, when we actually feel and contact that sense of a radiant warmth and friendliness that is there within us. That is, in a way, again, we could say, the very stuff of what we are, to use that way of speaking. And it isn't limited in itself and of itself as a quality, as an expression of life. It becomes limited by the way that we choose that which we will care for, by saying, this is what I value and this I do not. I value these people and not those. Or I value these experiences because they're nice, and those that are unpleasant or painful or scary, I don't value them at all. And the suffering that comes in that rejecting of experience is not because the experience is painful or difficult or scary even. It's because of our rejecting of the experience, our unwillingness to stay open with it, rather than somehow cutting ourselves off from the experience, which we don't do, because I don't know if you've noticed, but wanting something to go away or resisting it doesn't make it go away. It actually just makes it hurt more. What happens when we do that is we disconnect from that inner fount, we could say, that inner wellspring of connection, of warmth, of kindness, of care. by having said this I will not open to, what actually happens is that we lose contact with that which is so precious and upon which our well-being and happiness really depends. That connection within our own hearts and life. So what would it mean for us to really trust, to really see? Because it's not just a matter of blind faith, what I'm speaking about, I hope, that you can see to some extent in your experience that when one releases the habit of distraction, presence is simply what's here. Is that just conscious? Yeah, this is it. Here we are. And when we release that habit of reaction or rejection or resistance, there's just a natural sense of connection. It's what's here. It's what happens. That we can see that in our experience. If we can trust that more, then we can see that that's really what's asked of us. That's the journey of our transformation. Releasing, understanding what it is that locks us into those patterns of distractedness and resistance, which is, as I said, a lot to do with seeking security and avoiding trying to avoid the pain of apparent disconnection or separateness. If we're willing to feel those places of discomfort, if we're willing to open to them and include them as well, we start to see that they are not somehow evidence of some true disconnection or separation, but simply the shell, and the painful shell, but the shell of a view that does not accord with what is true, and through which we are asked to pass, we could say, penetrate, or perhaps in other language, we're really invited to no longer give support to and therefore allow to dissolve this view, this relating, this perspective of life that holds ourselves separate from the world, that holds one thing as of value and another thing as not. That process, as in the famous lines of Seng Tsan and the verses of Absolute Trust, he says, make but a hair's breadth of distinction and heaven and hell are set apart. The distinction between good and bad is the primal disease of the mind. So his words are pretty close to. And that sense of, okay, so what is it to not separate, what we call ourself from this world, to not make that boundary or that hard distinction? Of course there's a sort of a relative value to recognizing that, yeah, I'm sitting here and you're sitting there, and when it's lunchtime it's good to know which mouth you should be putting the sandwich in, because otherwise it's going to get a little confusing, not to mention complicated. But when we're not operating from that point of view of me and you, us and them, that which I like, that which I don't like, much more a sense of just that natural quality of presence, that natural quality of kindness and connectedness that really lies at the core of it all, that is what is there. This is what we are uncovering in our practice. We're not making it happen, we're uncovering it. And the very way in which we engage in that process needs to be a reflection of that understanding that this is so. Or else the very process of trying to produce it becomes that which obscures it. This human condition that the Buddha spoke of as blindness or ignorance is essentially to be unaware of the radiance of life, to be not consciously in contact with it. And in that unawareness, lost in the chasing after what it reveals, chasing after what is revealed by the radiance, or running away from it equally, which is much the same activity, chasing one thing or running from another. When we actually start to turn to the fact of that radiance itself, the sense of that life is illuminated, that there is this conscious existence that cares, that we can see that this is what is at the heart of life, then something shifts. Something shifts. And we continue in this journey of cultivating and developing the wholesome and the beneficial qualities of heart and mind, of, and developing sort of focus and concentration and openness and curiosity, which I've spoken of, and many other things such as patience and generosity and loving kindness and compassion and courageous effort. All these things one continues to develop, but from a very different place. So one sees that already there is this wholesomeness at the heart of life. The Buddha once spoke of it like this. He said, "Friends, this mind is luminous." This heart mind, I would say, is luminous, radiant, brightly shining. It is clouded and obscured by forces that come from outside. This the foolish do not understand. And so for them, there is no development and cultivation of the heart and mind. He said, this heart mind is luminous, radiant, brightly shining. And it is free from those forces which obscure. This, the well-instructed practitioner of Dharma understands. And so for them, there is the development and cultivation of heart and mind. So what happens when we start to really have a sense of this? That there is this work of cultivation and development, and yet the natural radiance, you could say the freedom of the heart, is not obscured by these things that appear to obscure it. That our life is not actually bound by the things that appear to bind it. In many ways, life just goes on from that place, much as it has, and yet something in the heart, in the core of the being, just rests. And this we speak of as peace. So let's sit quietly for a minute or two. I'll finish with a poem by Mary Oliver called The Buddha's Last Instruction. I'll just read it through a couple of times. Make of yourself a light, said the Buddha before he died. I think of this every morning as the east begins to tear off its many clouds of darkness to send up the first signal, a white fan, streaked with pink and violet, even green. An old man, he lay down between two sala trees and he might have said anything, knowing it was his final hour. The light burns upward. It thickens and settles over the fields. Around him, the villagers gathered and stretched forward to listen. Even before the sun itself hangs disattached in the blue air, I am touched everywhere by its ocean of yellow waves. No doubt he thought of everything that had happened in his difficult life. And then I feel the sun itself as it blazes over the hills like a million flowers on fire. Clearly I'm not needed. Yet I feel myself turning into something of inexplicable value. Slowly, beneath the branches, he raised his head. He looked into the faces of that frightened crowd. Make of yourself a light, said the Buddha before he died. I think of this every morning as the east begins to tear off its many clouds of darkness to send up the first signal, a white fan streaked with pink and violet, even green. An old man, he lay down between two sala trees and he might have said anything, knowing it was his final hour. The light burns upward, it thickens and settles over the fields. Around him, the villagers gathered and stretched forward to listen. Even before the sun itself hangs disattached in the blue air, I am touched everywhere by its ocean of yellow waves. No doubt he thought of everything that had happened in his difficult life. And then I feel the sun itself as it blazes over the hills like a million flowers on fire. Clearly I'm not needed. Yet I feel myself turning into something of inexplicable value. Slowly, beneath the branches, he raised his head. He looked into the faces of that frightened crowd. Make of yourself a light, said the Buddha before he died.